Podtacular episode 386, When Champions Rise, for August 8th, 2013. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And this week, we are here to talk about some more Halo news. Of course, we are in the middle of the championship for the Halo 4 Summer Global Championships right now. And week 4, almost done. Week 5 is quickly approaching. We are almost at the end of the online qualifiers. Gamescom's coming up very soon. We have AGL 9 this weekend, so lots of tournament-related stuff going on this week and the next week, and really throughout the end of this month until PAX comes around. So, a good time to be a Halo gamer, wouldn't you say, Brent?
Oh, yes. I'm excited about Halo right now.
Of course, which is why we're talking about Halo.
Oh, yes, that's why I'm on a Halo podcast.
Exactly. So, you may be wondering where our featured guest is tonight. The folks over at Guardian Radio have actually had to postpone their appearance on our show because they were invited by the illustrious Deej over from Bungie to have a little Battlefield 3 playdate. So they decided to say, screw you guys, we're going to go play with Deej because he's Bungie and he's cool and we're not. Not really, but they had the playdate, so they're going to be on the second week after PAX. So they're going to be on September 12th to talk about some Destiny stuff, so fear not, they are not in the realm of just not showing up or just rescheduling them, but they will be on. No need to worry about that. But we do have a lot of stuff to talk about today regarding the champions championship, regarding some new information that's come out with regards to the championship bundle, and we have a few submissions to read off and one voicemail to play for you guys. So there'll be a little bit shorter of a show tonight as we've been having it in the past, but hopefully you guys get your fill of Halo news without any lack of feeling or length. Before we get into Halo news, though, there was a video that got released today, as of this recording, with an unboxing of the Xbox One. So, for those of you who probably pay attention to the news, there was a little while there where people didn't think that the Xbox One was going to be boxed with a headset. Well, you can be rest assured that it does come with a headset now. And it does come with the Kinect sensor still, and you actually get a 4K rated HDMI cable. Now, what that means is there's, with the advent of HDTVs and just the growing specs of HD technology and everything, 4K is a video standard. So we have 720p, 1080p, right above that is 2K, and then above that is 4K.
What's above that?
I don't know if that's been defined yet.
10K, 8K.
I probably 8K if they keep on going in that numbered sequence. But we do have all of that content in the box that comes with. And it does come with one Xbox One controller that appears to be wireless. So, of course, all the goodies that you would normally expect with a 360 console that you buy, you're going to get in the Xbox One box as well. For those that order the Day 1 edition, you also get the special Chrome D-pad that's on the controller and the Day 1 Xbox insignia on the controller. Now, in the video that we're showing on the live stream, Major Nelson is actually going through the entire box, pulling everything out, has everything laid on some tables, and the little port on the top that we were kind of wondering what it was, it's actually a high-speed USB 3.0 port. So I'm assuming all the wired controllers, all the charging cables for the controllers and everything is going to be USB 3.0. So we have one of those on the top and two of those on the back. And then that odd looking connector on the back of the Xbox One that we had no idea what it was for. It's for the Kinect. So go figure.
Yep. Well, I figured that kind of. I mean, a lot of people were figuring that.
Right.
They just figured, you know, here's this piece of technology that we don't know a whole lot about, and here's the Xbox One, which we know will integrate Kinect 2.0 to a large extent. You know, everybody's going to have a Kinect this time around, so completely different game. That's what I kind of thought it was, but I was kind of hoping it'd be something else, like something incredible that nobody had known about yet.
Yeah, that'd be insane. And of course, internal specs, there is a 500 gigabyte hard drive, 8 gigs of RAM, and something that kind of piqued my ears a little bit. It's running an x86 processor. Now, for those tech savvy, you know that's a 32-bit processor instead of 64-bit processor. Most 32-bit processors cannot handle anything over 3.2 gigabytes of RAM. There are some processors that do, are able to address space out that memory. So I'm guessing they are doing something like that with the Xbox One. But with all the computers out there, at least the high-end gaming ones that are 64-bit, it's a little surprising that they wouldn't invest in that technology. But most games still run at 86-bit on PC, so it's not too surprising.
Yeah. This is a little disappointing. You expect the new generation of consoles to embrace a new generation of tech. And, I mean, this isn't even a new generation. I mean, we've had 64-bit, you know, programming and gaming for a while now, so...
Right.
I don't really understand why they're hesitant to go that route, but it's not going to make a huge difference, you know, except for the memory stuff like you're talking about. I don't think that they would put memory in the system if it wasn't able to actually use that memory.
Well, so, we know it's, and I think one of the reasons behind that might be is with the dual OS environment. So we already know based on the Xbox One briefing that half of that memory is allocated to the OS and half of that memory is allocated towards gaming. So that's 4 gigs apiece, and a 32-bit processor on a conventional computer can address most of that out. So maybe it's having a way that can go back and forth between the two. Maybe there's some special programming in the hypervisor that they have coded that can account for all that memory, but we're not really getting into the technical details that deep of the Xbox One, but just kind of throwing out there that the Xbox One unboxing video has been released, and to calm everyone's fears, it does come with all the essentials that you need to game, including the headset, the Kinect sensor, and a controller, and an HDMI cable. So let's go ahead and jump right into some bulletin news. We have, of course, the Championships bundle, which is going to be coming out on August 20th, that is the week before PAX. So I think we're going to actually bring back Monday Night Matchmaking for that week, because that week the online qualifiers will be done as well. So we'll open up Monday Night Matchmaking to have some gameplay going on for the Champions bundle. And for just a reminder, that includes Pitfall, which is a Pit remake from Halo 3. And then we have Vertigo, which is the new map that has those two kind of switch interactive bits that can electrify those second level structures on the map. Did you watch the coverage at Comic-Con at all, Brent?
No, I did not.
So whenever they were doing the games, a lot of people didn't go after those switches. And I don't know if that's because people are just used to not having those in the game, or if it was something that people didn't want to bother with taking the time to shoot them out, or if people just really didn't acknowledge that they were there because it wasn't something that stuck out. But it seems like not many people were utilizing those switches to their full effect. And it didn't, at least for the games I watched, which were on Saturdays, the regular like Slayer, King of the Hill type stuff, not the Ricochet game type that which they showed on Friday. But during those games, it didn't seem like people were really using those switches until maybe the last two or three games or so, when it actually kind of helped people out a little bit. So it's going to be interesting going into the game to see what people do with the switches when the maps finally hit the general public.
Well, I mean, anytime you introduce a new element into gameplay, it's going to take people a while to fully understand how to utilize that element to their advantage while they're playing a match. Mm-hmm. Who was playing? Was it 343 members or like,
no, this was people from the crowd, and Naked Eli was one of them.
Okay, then you could also maybe play that up to ignorance of that particular, you know, feature of the map. I don't know. I mean, obviously, if you haven't been playing it a lot, it would be an intense risk to go ahead and try to use that when you don't know what it does. So, I mean, it's just going to take people a while to get used to it. It's the same thing with the gates on, you know, coagulation. I mean, those are, if you think about it, I mean, even less influential on the match, assuming you're playing Slayer than this is, and people didn't really understand how to use that to their advantage for a while. It's just going to take people a second to understand, how do I use this map feature, specifically, you know, taking down shields to my advantage. And the point is, basically, you just wait until most of the team is in that area and you shoot it. It's that simple, but people haven't gotten a hold of that in their mind yet. I don't know.
Right. Well, we had a lot of that go on from Halo 3, where people were used to having the switches. We had them on High Ground, we had them on Last Resort, and a few other maps that had those switches built into the game. Reach didn't have any switches in there. Halo 2 was the big proponent for having switches. And it is nice to see them kind of bring it back into Halo 4, but I would like to see maps in Halo 5 out of the box that have switches built into them and actually change map flow. Because the ones in Vertigo don't really change the map flow. It just changes tactics a little bit, because if you're up there, you just know when to run. Because it's 2 seconds. You have 2 complete seconds to get out of there, and it's pretty easy to get out of that circle. There's a few choke points where you might not be able to get out that quickly, but it's really not that difficult. Whereas some of the ones from Halo 2 and Halo 3, they completely changed map flow. Yeah. So I want to see those kind of games, or those kind of maps, back in Halo. That'd be really, really cool. I feel that's one of those quintessential pieces of Halo that we haven't had the opportunity to really bite down into for a little while.
Yeah, we haven't had that.
And we're getting a small kind of appetizer with Vertigo, is kind of how I'm feeling.
I hope it matters. People in the Twitch chat are talking about how it's possibly, you know, going to get patched out because it's just going to be ineffectual. First of all, I mean, you don't patch things out just because they don't work.
Right.
You generally patch things out because they work far too well. They're overpowered.
Like the bolt shot that still needs to be fixed?
Yeah. I don't understand why the bolt shot is even in this game. If the bolt shot shows up in Halo 5, I'm going to be insanely disappointed. But, I mean, the fact that they are doing anything on these maps is a good sign to me. You know, I mean, the fact that they understand people enjoy interactive map elements. They enjoy buttons. They enjoy things that they can do in combat that aren't, you know, normal across maps. You know, I mean, there's a specific thing that you do on Last Resort that, you know, breaks down that one specific bridge. I mean, that only happens on that one map. You can only do that once on that one map. And I think people are excited about different maps bringing different game elements in, because you really can't introduce new game elements through new weapons or new modifications, because that generally tends to break the game and developers don't want to mess with it. But when you confine that to a single map, you know, it's fine if it's overpowered, because then you can just take it out later, like they were talking about earlier, just patch it out, and then it's fine, you know, I mean. So interactive map elements, to me, are a way for the developer to get creative with the gameplay of Halo, where they can actually switch it up in a way that's, you know, tailored specifically to this one map, but doesn't affect gameplay throughout the entire game. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand if you don't like this thing, you know, this one specific interactive map element, I completely understand. You know, I mean, it's completely different. We haven't really, the only other map element I can think of that was kind of like this is maybe like the train on Terminal.
Yeah,
because it'll actually
thing.
Kill you, but the train doesn't give you a advantage, really. I mean, if you get hit by the train, it's generally just because, one, you were standing on the tracks and you weren't paying attention. Two, just dumb luck, the train happened to come by and hit you for no reason. This is very intentional in terms of its activation and its use. I mean, once you activate it, personally, you have to actually shoot it. Then you can actually, you know, sweep up the kills from it and benefit from what you've done, whereas on Terminal, you get hit by the train, it just says, killed by the Guardians, and you spawn back. I mean...
Right. It's a different kind of interactive piece within the game, and I think going back to the Switch mentality, that just changes up the how the map flows instead of actually directly affecting the encounter-to-encounter game elements is kind of what is needed back in the game. I think High Ground is pretty much the prime example in terms of what using interactive pieces. You have the door switch that you had closed mostly on one side objectives, so for like assault and capture the flag, and you had the little hatch on top of the outside base as well. Another good one I like to think of is Containment from Halo 2. Because you had those two big doors and you could go outside and there was a little archway where you could activate the switch, and it was where the teleporter came out from either side of the bases, and you can actually go in through the front door. And it would stay open for about 10 seconds or so. So you could have someone drive a tank up to the door, someone could hit the switch and let the tank roll right in. So it's more of this, it changes the game dynamic instead of just directly impacting the encounter-to-encounter space.
Well, actually, my favorite part of High Grounds is the little pipe on the right side of the map when you spawn on offensive side.
The sneak pipe?
The sneak pipe. I love that thing. Because every time you get, like, territories or whatever they called it, you know, in Halo 3, yeah, it was mm-hmm. territories. It was the new territories.
Yeah, it was territories. Yep.
Nobody would ever think about that one territory. I mean, I think it was either 4 or 5, but they would all be like focused on 1 and 2, which is on the offensive side, and you could just sneak up into whatever that territory was right there at the end of the sneak pipe and take it like immediately, and they'd all freak out on the other team. Now, I mean, eventually people started to understand you need to kind of protect that area because the sneak pipe is meant for that specifically. You sneak in and you take the territory, but that was my favorite part because you had to crouch specifically to get in there. So automatically you've lost mobility, you know, just going in there, and you can't regain it because there's no way you could get in or out fast enough to avoid a confrontation. And then once you're in there, I mean, it's either you either had a spike grenade with you, which is real handy because it would just tear anybody up in that pipe, or there just wasn't anybody there and you could sneak through. So
spike grenades were devastating in that pipe.
Oh man, I love that pipe.
If you were in that pipe and someone threw a spike grenade in there, you were done. You were shredded meat for the next person that came by.
I think the spike grenade was like made specifically for that pipe. Really?
I don't know. There were a few instances on Sandtrap that I think the spike grenade worked really well too when you were inside the structures. Like you're running by, I think it was Blue Flag? I forget which one where the team actually spawns on the close side base. Not the open side one, but I think you had Assault go in there. And whenever you were kind of in those kind of catacomb areas, people would throw spike grenades on the wall if they were chasing them, and they would just bounce everywhere. So it was someone in the chat said the spike grenade was made from making wieners.
It does kind of look like a wiener.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. That's one side of the feature of that grenade to take. Oh, my. So, what were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about championship bundle and switches. So, going back to the championships bundle, we have some medals that have been announced finally for the Ricochet game type. So there are 5 new medals, and I believe this is the first time we've actually had new medals be implemented into the game. We've had medals just in the game before with Halo 3 and all the other previous Halo titles, but we never had medals added to the game. So this is something that's really cool.
If we've ever had a brand new game type, like specifically tailored for the game, you know, introduced later into a game's life cycle. Like, I don't think we have. Like, not any that I can think of. I'm not talking about, like, custom games or Forge. I'm saying a, like, full game type that is introduced into a game with its own medals and its own, you know, achievement set, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't think there is. Maybe there is. I just can't think of one.
Not with Halo, at least. No. Granted, I haven't really played many other games that include new kind of... Well, maybe... Has Call of Duty done something like that before?
Maybe. I don't care. I mean, it's Call of Duty. They can do whatever they want. I mean, when you have all that money, like, it just doesn't matter anymore. Activision is essentially a Call of Duty business at this point until Destiny comes out. And then they'll become a Destiny business, and Bungie's going to find out that they are far more beholden to Activision than they ever thought they were.
I hope there's some piece of that legislation that does keep their kind of independence throughout the whole Destiny process.
Yeah, I'm just...
I think there is. I think Bungie's smart. They're not going to just completely sell out like that. I don't want to say they did it with Microsoft because I like Halo and everything, but it's kind of what happened. They were in financial trouble with the game, so Microsoft helped pick them up. And, I mean, Halo turned out to be a fantastic franchise, and we're still talking about it here 12 years?
A decade and a half later.
12 years,
you know?
12 years almost, after the game released. So it just goes to show that Bungie makes good games.
Yeah.
So don't hinder their creative ability. Back onto the medals, though. The five new medals that we have is, first one is goal defense. Kill an enemy ball carrier within 25 meters of your goal without them scoring. So that one's pretty obvious. You have the flag defense medal, and you have the, I think, yeah, it's just a flag that you have. You don't have assault in Halo 4. So it's very similar to that one. Ball clear. Throw a ball 40 meters away from your own goal. Goalkeeper, kill 5 enemies while defending the goal. Rejection, intercept a throw within 25 meters of your goal. And fast break, score a goal within 15 seconds of the ball set without a turnover. I have a feeling that one's going to be pretty easy to get.
Fast break?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, against terrible opponents, maybe. I mean, it's kind of like in Griffball, you know? I mean, you can score instantly against terrible opponents, you know, all...
It's not necessarily against terrible opponents either. It's just like sometimes you just get the lucky end of the draw, and with this, if you can go grab the ball and somehow not die and have that nice throw, then you're good to go.
Yeah. Trying to figure out which one would be the toughest to obtain. Probably the goalkeeper. I mean, just in terms, I mean, how often are you going to kill 5 enemies while you're, you know, I don't understand really the parameters around it. Like, are you defending the goal if you are near the goal, or does it, like, not matter where you are on the map as long as you're playing defense? Like, how does that work?
I would assume it's, like, the killing spree of goal defense.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, do you have to be near the goal to be considered defending it, or can I just be anywhere on the map killing people, and as long as my team doesn't have the ball?
No. It's just like having 5 of the gold defense medals.
All right.
I'm pretty sure it's what that is.
Okay. That makes sense. I didn't know, but...
Well, it doesn't specifically state, but I have a feeling, yeah, the way it's worded, it makes it sound like it's a spree of 5 gold defenses.
Yeah.
So, we have the update for the Global Championship. As you guys know, we are currently on week 4, and that means the last week of the online qualifier is coming up very, very rapidly. So, if you have not played yet, make sure you go over and register on the Halo 4 Global Championship website. Just go to halo.xbox.com or halowaypoint.com, and there's a link at the very top, and it'll take you to the Halo 4 Global Championship portal, and then you can go and register there. Quick note, if you do go register, you are entitled to a free avatar shirt, so it's good to just go ahead and register anyways, even if you know you're not going to do well and not get in the top 4 like myself and Brent and a few other people that we know. We do have some finally confirmed winners, though. How about that, Brent? people are finally getting the yes, you did well, you did actually legitimately win, and we have 3 out of the 4 for the first week, so they're still working on the fourth one, but at least we know 3 people for sure that are going to the Halo 4 Global Championship at PAX. And for week 1, the 3 out of the 4 are Garagreco, I'm butchering this name, Garagreco39, T5T, Carnopy, and Straight Sick. So, congratulations to you guys for advancing onto the finals. Enjoy that finalist position. You guys are amongst some of the best Halo players that I will envy and despise for the rest of my life. No, just kidding. But good job, guys. We'll probably get the fourth one, I bet, in next week's bulletin. They are currently working for getting the list finalized down for week 2. They do have 4 confirmed winners so far, but they are reaching out to make sure that they can go. So it sounds like 343 is at least reaching out to these people and seeing if they are able to go. And if they're not, they're giving it to the people next down the list. So that's good that they're putting in that effort.
Yeah.
So good job for you, 343. We have week 3 that has been wrapped up as well. So they're, of course, looking into those. A couple of notes that they put in the bulletin for this week that they said they've been catching people with is since the some of the things that made the process just take a lot longer was that people were using exploits such as network manipulation, boosting. I have a feeling they probably detect some of that logout stuff that we talked about. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago. I think last week. So there are heavily investigating everyone that's playing. So 343 is doing their due diligence and making sure that everyone that does get in those top 4 spots deserves that spot. Of course, you know, there's the pro players that are up there and that have multiple accounts. Hopefully 343 is smart enough to kind of go through those. Although I haven't read the rules, so I guess from a legal perspective, that's all right. I don't know if it says in there anywhere that you can only play under 1 gamer tag or not. If someone has read the rules in that much depth, feel free to let us know. And if it is, then that means 343 is probably looking at that too. For the time being, though, the current score or the current leaderboard for week 4 is as follows. And we have one up here that we are very familiar with from the competitive community, and that is Nated. He has played 61 games. Next at number 2, Foxy PJX. Number 3 is MM Jobust. Number 4, MM Jobust has 57 games. Foxy PJX has 58 games. Biggie Small has 55 games. ArcX Snow Bieber has 50 games. Dimension Slays has 45 games. Dr. Chaos has 42 games. And Redivious Gnome 2 has 33 games.
Yes, it's good to see that Biggie Smalls is still playing Halo despite being dead. It's also good to see that he's ranked in the top 8. Good job, Biggie Smalls.
I have no idea who that is.
He's the notorious B.I.G. Biggie?
No clue.
He is a rapper, and he is dead. He was famously in a rivalry with Tupac Shakur. And he made fun of Tupac after Tupac got killed, and then he got killed via the same method, so...
That's mildly disturbing.
Yeah, fun facts.
Thank you, Brent. This has been quite an interesting podcast. You guys should have been here for the pre-show. All right. So good luck to everyone in the week 4 of play. I was going to play in this one, but again, it comes down to schedule and me being busy with other things and just knowing that it wasn't going to be possible for me. It didn't even place in the first place, but this is the playlist I probably would have done better in, if not the best playlist I would have had. This one of this week, of course, was you had King of the Hill and Oddball mixed in with the Slayer game types, the UNSC Slayer, the Covenant Slayer, and the Forerunner Slayer. So I think this week, if I were to participate, probably would have been the best week to qualify, followed closely by next week, which is actually Infinity Rumble. So we have an additional game type. So they did announce that Legendary Rumble was going to be the game type for the fifth week, but we have Legendary Rumble BRs included in that now. So, of course, Legendary Rumble is being pulled off similarly to the game types as it is for Legendary Slayer on the 4v4 game types. So you have starting assault rifles, two frag grenades, no armor abilities, tactical packages, resupply, and support upgrade, of course, is explosives, no secondary weapon. The Legendary Rumble BR, you actually have two primaries. You have the battle rifle as primary, and you have the assault rifle as secondary. I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be voting for that Legendary Rumble BR spot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody loves BRs. Nobody, I mean, not nobody, but I mean, most people generally don't want to play a competitive match with just assault rifles. They want a precision weapon. So they're going to want a BR.
Right. Of course, 25 kills to win, 12 minutes on the clock, 1 point per kill, same as it's been throughout the rest of the online qualifiers. So not many changes there. Pretty simple, straightforward. Again, this is the very last week for the online qualifier. So if you have not played yet and you are interested in playing, and for some reason you just haven't decided to register until now, make sure you go over and register. You do, just by registering, you're awarded with the free Skills Avatar shirt. And I believe that was the one they were giving away with the, whenever they had the Castle CSR when they came out with that.
Oh, yes. So you had to get to CSR 35 or
35,
something.
35, yep. Yes.
Yes. So
in one specific playlist.
So the S-Kills shirt can be yours now. Luckily, I mean, I really couldn't see him keeping an avatar item like that, you know, separated from the public for too long, because there were only like, what, 150 people that got to CSR 35 and Majestic DLC or whatever it was at the time. I mean, really, it was like a small number of people.
Was it Majestic? I thought it was. Yeah, it probably was, because that was the FFA stuff, wasn't it? No. It was. Well, was it Castle or?
I think it was Castle.
I'd have to go back and check.
I'm pretty sure.
It's been so long.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Castle map pack. I think.
Okay.
Maybe, possibly.
If someone in the stream can verify real quick, that'd be
helpful.
Anyway,
whoever was in that, there weren't a whole lot of people who ended up getting CSR.
There were 28.
Yeah, so I mean, 28 people getting an avatar t-shirt. They needed to get that out to other people because, I mean, how much money did they spend just creating that one avatar item? I mean, it seems really simple, but creating stuff like that ends up costing like thousands of bucks.
Right.
Just getting it up on Xbox Live, so.
So it was Castle Map Pack. I just pulled it up.
Yep.
And they did actually release a blog post a couple days ago releasing the winners of that competitive skill rank challenge. So I have it up on the stream right now of the, it's actually 22 players that got it. So they were all able to, I believe, get that skill shirt. And I'm guessing it's the same skill shirt as the one that you can get when you just go ahead and register for the tournament. So make sure you go ahead, go and do that at least, even if you're not going to participate. If you want a free Halo Avatar shirt, it's worth the 2 minutes it takes to register.
I want an avatar t-shirt that says Eggheads and it's got like Sarah Palmer's face on it.
Of course you would, Brent.
Oh man, I'd love that. That would be great. You know how many like people would buy that if it were available to them just because they hate Sarah Palmer?
Like,
even if you don't like Sarah Palmer, the fact that it would say Eggheads would give you a reason to buy it just like sarcastically, like, yeah, Eggheads. Like, her dialogue is awful in the first season of Spartan Ops.
The first half.
Well, yeah, the first half of the first season. I consider that like two different seasons for some reason. To me, that seemed like it was like, because the two parts were completely different. I mean, not story-wise, I'm talking in terms of gameplay. Those two different seasons were very, very different. The second half is much better.
It was. Just a quick note, the Soteros, actually one of the staff over from Radio Life, he's in the live stream right now. He says, formal one of the pros, has actually qualified via a secondary account, so...
Hmm.
Yeah.
That seems like...
Apparently, it is against the rules of Virgin Mobile Gaming, but it's not against the rules of 343 Industries. So, 343's Industries rules trump.
Well, I mean, yeah. The people who make the game, like, they get to decide the rules.
No, it's usually the people that are running the tournament that get to make the rules, and the ones that are handing out the prizes, and that's Virgin Gaming. Well, I don't know. It may be like a certain split between Virgin Mobile that's handing out and Microsoft, and maybe Microsoft just has the final say.
I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but I'm just saying if you run a tournament and then the people who make the video game that you're basing your tournament around say this is the way we want the rules to be, I mean, are you really going to second guess them? Especially when you have an official contract with these people. I mean, Virgin Mobile and Halo, I mean, or 343 joining together is a very commercial kind of contract with each other. They're not, I mean, it's not like the MLG or AGL going up to 343 and saying, hey, we love this game and we want to have these tournaments and we're doing it for the love of the game and you know, a little bit of money. It's Virgin Gaming or Virgin Mobile or whatever it is, you know, the Virgin company, which is out to make money, teaming up with 343, which is a subsidiary of Microsoft Game Studios, which is a subsidiary of Microsoft, who are definitely out to make money, and it's just a commercial endeavor. I mean, the Virgin isn't going to second guess what 343 says on this matter. I don't think they would second guess any game company that they teamed up with. If they had some sort of Call of Duty Virgin Gaming tournament, if, you know, whoever's still doing it now, is Treyarch still a thing, or did they turn into Infinity Ward? Like, what happened? Whoever makes Call of Duty now, Treyarch or Infinity Ward or whoever it is, whoever works for Activision, they would get the final say in a Call of Duty tournament over Virgin Gaming.
That's true, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so... Yeah, we'll see how that multiple accounts thing plays out. The last qualifying chance that people have is Gamescom, which is coming up in Germany. So this is funny. The weekend before PAX. So if you qualify and you weren't planning on going to PAX, well, you get an all-expense-paid trip to PAX the week before. I'm sure that's an expensive plane ticket.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be nice, though, I bet.
Oh, yeah. I want to go to PAX. They should just send me a ticket for free. They should just send me to PAX for no reason. Like, I'm not even going to show up in the tournament. Just know that I'll be there.
If only that were possible, Brent.
If only that were enough for 343, just knowing I would be there. They'd be like, yes, yeah, we'll pony up the cash for it.
So, unlike RTX, the Gamescom is going to be a walk-up tournament. So at RTX, you actually went and registered for the tournament. You could go on the mornings prior to the competition on Friday and Saturday and register. And I don't think it was Sunday because they have people register and you get filled. But they're changing it up a little bit for Gamescom. And it's just you walk up and you sign up to go. And they're looking to accommodate about 15,000 competitors at Gamescom, using the same game types and maps that they did at RTX, which is Haven, Onyx, which I hate that map, and Skyline. So if you're at Gamescom and you're listening to this, well, welcome from across the pond, first off, and good luck if you're going over there and competing. For those that get the top six spots, I bet is what it is. I think it's similar to how it is for RTX. So for those that get the top spots and qualified to go to the finalists, we will see you at PAX. So good luck to everyone out there. Lastly, in the bulletin, Screenshot Spotlight is Monitor this week.
Woo! It's a good set.
It's a decent set. I
enjoy it. Some of them are not that great, but I'm saying the ones that are good are pretty good.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I like, let's see, looking through some of these, Home is pretty good. Embodiment of Eden.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
I don't know how they did that. That one looks sick.
That's the one, baby. Embodiment of Eden wins. Gothic Lucy, like, good job. You get it. You beat Reclaimed Halo at his own game. I mean, incidentally, right? He ends up in this with a pretty good, you know, kind of silhouetted
like leaf. stencil drawing.
Yeah, it's cool, but Embodiment of Eden, just the fact that I have no idea how it was crafted, that helps. Like, also enjoy the rainbow colors, but good stuff. Monitor Mono, where it looks like Guilty Spark is kind of evolving into his secondary form as a Pokemon. That's kind of cool.
Of course, here comes Pokemon.
I like Mage Light. It's got that nice black and white contrast effect going to it. Pretty good stuff. I like this set.
I like Designation. That one is really cool.
Yeah. I don't like the picture of Crimson Oracle, really. I mean, it's not an interesting screenshot, but the idea of an Oracle firing
holding
a UNSC
a turret.
Mounted turret is pretty funny to me.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I will agree with that. I personally like Seasons Change. It's not that complex or different. I just like the visual aesthetic of having the monitor and just the drastic change in color to the leaves on the side.
Yeah.
The monitor looks at a monitor as just a play on words.
Yeah, that's...
it's more for comedic effect.
Yeah, I mean, the caption is better than the screenshot, like... Yeah, that's funnier.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or the screenshot makes the... Or the caption makes the screenshot.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Right. So, pretty good all around for the screenshots this week.
Yeah.
So, that is the bulletin for this week. Wrapping up with some more competition-related things. AGL9 is this weekend. So, for those that follow competitive Halo, we've had the Arena Gaming guys on before. We have, from AGL3 through AGL9, the winners in the 4v4 brackets are all getting invites, and I learned this new this week, so it's not exactly as bad as I anticipated as it was the week prior, but for everyone that has made those qualifications of having those top positions in the AGL tournaments, they aren't necessarily directly inserted into the finalist brackets. There's essentially a loser's bracket that they have to play in, and they don't get trips paid for or anything. They still have to pay their own way. They still have to house themselves up in their own hotel, but they do get a chance to play. So I'm a little bit more at ease with that than I was before. So the winners of the 4v4s from every event from AGL3 to AGL9 basically qualify to get inserted into this losing bracket, and then the top playing individuals from the free-for-all from the last event and this event coming up actually tomorrow as of this recording,
yeah,
get have the ability to play in this loser's bracket, if they're going. So, good luck to you guys for those that are going. We have some submissions for you guys.
My favorite part of the show. I love it.
Yes,
I love submissions.
We haven't had these in a while.
Send them in, people. I will edit them. Like, I used to hate editing these, but now I don't care. Just send in whatever. I mean, if it is any way legible, if I can understand the basic concept at all behind your submission, I will read it. I will edit it to where I can read it. Dustin can read it. Just please send them in. Please. Like, we want you to send in submissions. It makes us happy.
It does. It really, really does. Before we get to submissions, though, however, we do have a voicemail. So we're going to play that one real quick for you guys. again, for those that do want to send in voicemails, you can do that at 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256. And I guess at this point, once we get one every once in the blue moon, we will play them on the show for you. So you actually get to speak directly to the podcast audience. How about that, huh? So without further ado, the one and only voicemail for this week.
Hey, Podpack, it's Blitzkrieg Omega. Just wanted to say first, thank you so much for all the guys and time that you guys put effort into this. I know you guys put a lot of effort, so it really means a lot. I got two questions for you guys. First question is related to Spartan Ops. Obviously, they said they weren't doing a Spartan Ops Season 2, which is kind of disappointing, but my first question is the characters that we got from Spartan Ops, how much of a role do you think they'll play in Halo 5? Are we going to see more Spartan Ops in the future from them, or are they going to be more campaign-related? Secondly, do you think we'll ever see unique features to campaign? For example, I love dual wielding. I understand why they don't do it for multiplayer for a lot of reasons, but I don't see why it would be too much of a problem in campaign. Thanks so much for all your guys' efforts, and I appreciate it. See you guys out on the field. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Blitzkrieg Omega, for your voicemail. We appreciate it. To answer his first question, it was about whether or not the characters that we saw in Spartan Ops are going to play an integral role in Halo 5, or if we'll see them back in Spartan Ops for maybe Halo 5 if they bring that back, or whatnot. So, Brent, what are your thoughts?
I think that you will see them in Halo 5. I think that they won't play a big role. I think that they will play a passing role like they did in the Halo 4 campaign. I mean, if you look back at the Halo 4 campaign, they weren't really a big part of that. I mean, they are mostly just in Spartan Ops. If you see them in any large role ever again, it will be in a Spartan Ops Season 2, which we have yet to be confirmed, which makes me sad, kind of, because to me, the only good... I take that back. The biggest innovation that Halo 4 gave us, to me, the biggest thing that 343 has offered to the Halo universe is the idea of Spartan Ops. You know, the idea of kind of a firefight style co-op experience where you're not the Master Chief. You are definitely a Spartan 4, but you have Spartan abilities and you're fighting with your teammates to finish an objective. Whereas the Master Chief kind of just, they give him a very vague objective, you know, a very large objective, and they just basically tell him, you know, whatever, just do whatever, just blow stuff up, you know, go wherever you want, just make sure it happens. Whereas Spartan Ops is a very more militaristic experience where you are constantly receiving updates from a handler who is, you know, working with you, much more like it would be in real life, you know, with super soldiers and stuff, if we have those.
If you look at the backstory of Halo, though, Master Chief did get those kind of orders. It's just that...
I'm not saying that... Go ahead.
It's just that he was out there on his own, so the way that he does things and the way that he's kind of out there... He's more or less out there for humanity now than the UNSC. He's kind of grown past the strict military facet of the Spartan program that we've seen throughout the books, and we saw that direct defiance in Halo 4. So Master Chief, all in all, is kind of a different person than kind of how we met him in Halo 1.
Yeah, but he really didn't change that much until Halo 4. I mean, if you look at the difference between Chief in Halo 1 and Halo 3, there's not a huge difference. Maybe a little bit in terms of his relationship with Cortana, but in terms of here is a man who was raised to become a super soldier in the defense of humanity because humanity thought it was going to die off. And in the early days of the Human Covenant War, we were getting messed up really, really bad. I mean, everybody in ONI, everybody in the UNSC, they all thought that humanity was doomed. And that's why the Spartans were created. I mean, it was a last-ditch kind of sick...
No,
I take that back. It was
for the insurrection.
But I'm saying in terms of the continuation of the Spartan program, that was a direct result of the Human Covenant War and seeing how the Spartans were especially efficient against the Covenant. The Spartan 4 program is not an insurrectionist program. It is very much a Covenant program who just happens to fight off insurrections when they need to. The thing is, it's the Chief never really changed between 1 and 3. He had a mission and he finished it. You know, I mean, he did it his way. He did it the Chief way. It wasn't orthodox, but he wasn't really a rule breaker in terms of, you know, whenever he got a command from somebody who was his superior in the military, who ranked higher than him, he followed that command. Like, he didn't just outwardly disobey that, where we see more of that in Halo 4. And I think that's kind of what 343 is pushing towards, is kind of a Master Chief who is separated from the UNSC and he just does his own thing. Now, we'll talk about that in a different episode. Personally, I don't like the idea of a rogue super soldier who decides that he is no longer a part of the UNSC and just decides to go off and do his own thing. And that seems like a situation where you would send in Spartan IVs to possibly kill that soldier. I mean, if you assume that he was a major threat to your own organization, I don't think he is. I mean, the Chief never seems like he would actively fight against the UNSC as much as he's just kind of separating himself. Like, he's moving away from the UNSC. He's going John Rambo. Like, he doesn't want to be there, but he just has to be there to do what's right. So, to me, right. the Spartan Ops experience, I'm going to get back to it. I'm going to kind of pull myself away from this tangent. The Spartan Ops experience is more militaristic experience where you actually feel like a Spartan because you get to play as your own Spartan that you've created in the War Games experience. And to me, I enjoy that. I enjoy the fact that 343 took a risk making an episodic gaming experience that, you know, I mean, a lot of companies have tried to do it, but they've done it in ways that aren't really episodic in that you can just pull up your thing and then automatically download it. Unless you had bought like a full game and then you knew it was the full game. It was just weird. This was, to me, the way that episodic gaming should be done. I enjoy Spartan Ops, and if there isn't going to be a Spartan Ops Season 2, I'm going to be really, 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 really disappointed. And I know that Halo Fan for Life will probably kill himself if there isn't a Spartan Ops Season 2. So if you don't want blood on your hands,
extreme.
If you don't want blood on your hands, 343, then you had better make a Spops Season 2, if only for HFFL.
I think they'll do it for Halo 5, though. I don't believe they're going to do a second season of Spartan Ops for Halo 4.
Oh, yeah, I don't care.
Because we definitely know that they're going to be working on that storyline. They've already come out and said that the storyline the Spartan Ops had is not over. It's not ending there. It's just the delivery method now of how they're going to actually implement that. And I believe they're just going to bring Spartan Ops back in Halo 5, and that's where that quote-unquote second season is going to come in.
Well, I don't
and
care if it's...
I want to say, with how they're changing the whole, it's not a trilogy anymore for this, it's a saga now. I think we're going to have one side of Halo that might just be Chief, and then we'll have the secondary storyline that will either be self-contained within Spartan Ops, or maybe later down the line, it might break off into a branch game. Because we definitely have these two separate storylines now, and it seemed, for the most part, people kind of jived pretty well with how Spartan Ops ended. I know I was a big proponent of it. Sal was a big proponent of it. Brent, you're a big proponent of it. There's plenty of other people that really enjoy the storyline for Spartan Ops. So there's a potential there for it to just kind of break off into its own thing, whether or not it's included in the game as a whole separate experience, or if it's included in a separate title and we have two different Halo teams kind of working on this franchise. That still remains to be seen, but we'll definitely see some kind of resemblance of that storyline within the Halo universe. It's just whether or not it's directly tied to Chief. And with the trailer that we had for Halo Xbox One, or Halo 5, as most people are pretty much calling it nowadays, the Chief is off somewhere doing something else. So it might be to the point where those two storylines are at the point of kind of breaking off as separate parts of the Halo universe. And we do have a lot of people that are still clinging on to Halo because of Chief's story. The Chief is a very iconic character. The backstory that they have for him and the Forerunners is very, very deep and complex. And that's not going anywhere. But it's kind of what they decide to do with the Spartan Ops experience and how they want to branch out on that, which is going to be the interesting piece of how both of these parts of the universes coincide with each other.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I mean, I think that the Spartan Ops story should be separated from the Master Chief story. I mean, the idea of the Master Chief is that the UNSC, you know, they still consider him dead. I mean, as far as all of his files and stuff, Oni says that the Master Chief is, you know, missing in action, like all Spartans are, you know, even if they're dead, even though we know he's alive. The point is, really, the only people who know that the Chief is alive are the Oni spooks and, you know, higher up UNSC personnel like Lasky and the Master Chief himself and Halsey. Those are the only people. Like, everybody else really doesn't know that, and I don't think that Spartan Fours would necessarily know that the Chief's alive. I mean, if Halsey really didn't know, then nobody else on that ship probably knows, short of maybe like Sarah Palmer. The point is, I don't think that the story between the Chief and the Spartan Fours need to be intertwined. They need to be separate. Like, to me, the optimal Halo experience for the next generation was you'd have like one story where the Chief has to save the universe or whatever, but then at the same time, or, you know, perhaps at a different timeline, the Spartan Fours in the Spartan, you know, operations part of the game have their own set of objectives that they have to complete to also save the universe. I mean, I don't understand why you would have to have... You don't have to have,
but
like...
Those,
oh, go ahead.
Those two aspects still interact with each other, so there's still going to be some overlap. And
but I'm,
I think it's almost... You still need that interaction between both sides of the universe.
But I'm
it's
saying,
just whether or not how integrated they are with each other.
I'm saying they don't have to be integrated at all. I mean, they do have to be... Well, no, they don't. They don't have to be integrated. Think about it. In World War II, there were two major theaters of war, essentially. There was the Pacific, where the Americans were fighting the Japanese, and then there was the, you know, the actual Western Front, where you have, you know, the major war, the war against Germany, the war in Europe, you know, the Russia coming into Europe to fight off Nazi Germany. But those were two separate theaters of war. They were, I mean, the Nazis and the Japanese were allied. But those wars were completely different, and the way that they were fought were completely different, and they all had their own different ends. I mean, there's no reason why the Spartan Ops program, the Spartan Fours, couldn't be fighting something completely different from what the Master Chief's doing, and also contributing to a war that's happening on multiple fronts around the galaxy.
With how they set up Spartan Ops, though, it's almost as if while there are definitely separate, distinct storylines between the two, they're still kind of fighting a very, very common goal or objective. Because the Chief is basically going up what we assume right now is Minikin Bias, which is one of the which is the AI that basically turned against the Forerunners that the Forerunners made. And if you listen to our Krypton podcast, you'll know more about that. So there's that, and the UNSC, they're still looking into advanced Forerunner stuff. Now, maybe the Chief is the one that's going to be diving deep into the Forerunner past and eventually get to the precursors, and maybe the UNSC is just going out and trying to find all the Forerunner technology. So I see those two different aspects of it, but they're still kind of closely linked together, and I would assume that there's at least some overlap between the two.
Well, yeah, I'm saying there can be overlap, but they don't have to be like interconnected to the point where they even have to be in the same location with each other. The Spartan Fours could be off in some completely different part of the galaxy, you know, doing completely different, you know, related to the Covenant as they're fighting them at the time, whereas the Master Chief tends to deal with threats that are originally unknown. I mean, at first, the idea of Halo being a weapon was completely unknown to the Chief until he figured it out because Cortana was there with him, and then he had to face that new threat on his own, whereas the Spartan Fours get deployed into threats that they are already, you know, confirmed. I mean, they know about what they're fighting. Generally, the Spartan Fours don't discover anything incredible. They just do what they're told, because that's the point of the Spartan Four program. They go in, they do missions. They are a very spec op kind of thing going on. I mean, they're basically like American special ops.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I still think having, while they don't have to be directly in each other's storylines, I still think having references to each other is something that would help keep the storyline together. That's just my personal preference, I think.
Well, yeah, that's the point. I mean, it wouldn't be a debate if there was a single answer that you could tune into. I'm fine with that. I'm just saying, I feel like the Halo universe is large enough to support different enemies for both the Spartan Fours and the Master Chief, and that those stories can intertwine in ways larger than either Master Chief or the Spartan Fours themselves, but they're completely separated from each other. Just, the way that the Pacific War and, you know, the war in Europe was in World War II, like I was saying earlier. I mean, those are completely different, but ultimately fighting those two wars at the same time was essential to winning the one war, which was World War II as a whole.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And to get to his second part of the question, which we've kind of blown past at this point, the having the different features within the campaign as opposed to the multiplayer, we've seen differences in how the weapon system works. Like, whenever we got the TU update for Halo Reach, it didn't affect the campaign, but it only affected multiplayer, and the same thing has actually happened with Halo 4. Even though they did say it was supposed to be a global effect, it actually just affected the multiplayer aspect of things. I think that's right. So there's definitely the possibility to do that, but I don't know if 343 is willing to put in the extra time to create two different mechanisms for Halo. And it's not kind of how Halo feels or how it's been done in the past, really. You have the same combat system within multiplayer as you do the campaign, and then they tweak it afterwards. I don't know if you'll have the team would want to take the time to actually make two separate combat systems, one for campaign and Spartan Ops, and then one for multiplayer.
That'd be all right, but I don't think they'll do it. It would just cost too much. The payoff would not be worth the amount of funding you'd have to put into it. Kind of see what I'm saying?
Yep. No, I agree. I don't think it's an interesting idea, but I don't think it's something that 343 would invest time in.
Yeah.
Just saying.
For every decision you make, you have to cut something else, and I just don't see them cutting anything just for, you know, a separate combat system for campaign style, you know, gameplay as opposed to multiplayer.
Right.
But I mean, they might. I don't know. I mean, they got a whole bunch of money. If anybody can do it, it's them. You know?
Yeah, but we did see what happened when they decided to kind of rush stuff and change or not do certain things with Halo 4. So,
I mean, throwing money at something doesn't necessarily mean you have to rush it. Rushing something is a management choice, essentially. I mean, it is a financial choice at the end of the day. I mean, if you got to get something in before the bottom line of fiscal year or whatever you're in, I mean, yeah, but generally, the timing on a release is a management choice. If they feel that you need to get this game out at this time or it won't sell, then yeah. But I mean, think about companies like Valve who know better than that. I mean, how long's Half-Life 3 been in development, you know, supposedly?
If it is in development.
there is no way. No way. I mean, you don't end a story like that. Valve is too smart. There is no way there will not be a Half-Life 3. It's impossible. There will be a Half-Life 3. It might be 10 years from now. It might be 20 years from now. But I'm saying when you have a franchise that large and that important end on a cliffhanger that crazy. I mean, it wasn't not a cliffhanger, but just end on a note that serious and that dire and where essentially the heroes are just trapped. You don't do that. No story has ever ended like that. I mean, there has to be a Half-Life 3. Somebody somewhere is working on Half-Life 3. I mean, it might not be the entire team at Valve. They might, you know, be biding their time, you know, using minimal resources while they work on other stuff. But Half-Life 3 will be released in this decade, in my opinion.
Yeah, probably. Anyways, let's move on to some submissions, written submissions now. We have two of them to read through. So first one comes from Pins Halo, and he writes, "Hey guys, I was finally able to listen to episode 383, Man vs. Demon, and I really enjoyed it. It was interesting to hear an outside perspective on Halo, the game, and universe. The one thing that made me stop and think was their comments about the Halo universe outside of the game, Agro specifically, when he commented on how beautiful the story behind Halo is. At times, I think we get too caught up in the game itself and its shortcomings and forget just how amazing the Halo universe is. The Krypton discussion last week really hit home about how lucky we are as Halo fans. The universe has been built for us. The universe that has been built for us is one that Bungie and 343 have put a great amount of time and effort in, and that is what really drew me in. Keep up the great work, Sal Pentalo. So, yeah, there's definitely lots of things that Bungie and 343 have done for us in terms of the story for Halo, and it just going out of their way and bending over backwards to listen to the Halo fans and really try to tailor the best experience that they know how to create. That's both fun, enjoyable, and competitive. Now, we've had this discussion before. We'll have a podcast dedicated solely to this at some point, but just for now, we all know that there are small problems with Halo, and there are lots of small problems with Halo. When you have a bunch of small problems, they turn up to be just kind of one bigger problem. And the fact of the matter is that Halo 4 was not really the best game that we think 343 could have come out with.
Could have released Black Ops 2. I'm just trying to troll. I'm sorry. It wasn't a very effective troll.
So, of course, everyone is complaining about the lack of beta for Halo 4 and that what the game that we got was more of an alpha or a beta than the actual finished product. We have still things that are issues like the bolt shot, the camo glitch, duplicated files when you're trying to select a game type or map, and all those just little things. And little things add up to a bigger thing eventually. And it's come to the point where, yeah, we acknowledge that it's 343's first game. It's a big AAA title, so we're kind of giving them a little bit of leeway right now with Halo 4, but they gotta do stuff right for Halo 5 or else Halo is gonna kind of break down. And even if they come out with a fantastic game for Halo 5, that's not giving them a free write-off. They have to earn that trust in the community back past Halo 5. Halo 5, is that, okay, you've redeemed yourself, but you still got to come out with good games. We can't have another Halo 4.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's the point with any company. I mean, you can't redeem yourself and then in your next move go about, you know, tarnishing your reputation again. That's the problem with, you know, the third entry in any kind of series is the fact that generally the second one tends to be better than the first, and then the third one tends to be worse than the second one. And you just have to make sure that your third entry isn't worse than your first. So Halo 6 needs to be better than Halo 4 and possibly better than Halo 5 if you can do it. I mean, there's no reason not to make it better than Halo 5. I mean, the great thing about video game sequels are generally, and I'm just saying this because there are some terrible sequels, generally, video game sequels will improve on their predecessor. Generally, number 2 will be better than number 1. Now, in movies, that's not always the case. I mean, generally, you go into like a movie, like sometimes the sequel will ruin whatever you thought of the first movie. But with video games, generally, the sequel to the first game takes the mechanics that they came up with the first game that they thought were innovative, and they didn't really think out very long, so maybe they weren't very polished, and there were some problems there. And then in the second one, you get the chance to take those mechanics and polish them and make them even better. And that's why Mass Effect 2 is such a great game. I mean, you look at Mass Effect 2 over Mass Effect 1, it is like tons more fun than Mass Effect 1. Mass Effect 1 had a good story, but in terms of gameplay, I mean, I would play Mass Effect 2 all day long over Mass Effect 1, just because the combat is so much better. And then even in Mass Effect 3, you could say that the combat was maybe, you know, on par or better than Mass Effect 2. The story is a different story, pardon the pun, but it's the idea that video games, because it's all about mechanics, well, not all about mechanics, it's a large bit about mechanics. Mechanics can be polished, whereas with movies, you only have to deal with storytelling, and sometimes storytellers don't really know how to improve over their own brand of storytelling. It's not apparent as it is with video games. I mean, in a video game, if something is overpowered or underpowered, it is very apparent to the community when it comes out, and the community will tell you about it. storytelling is different because storytelling is a much more abstract thing. The thing with Halo is they need to realize they need to work on their storytelling. They can indeed, no matter what, as long as they are a company that isn't completely deaf to what their community wants, they can improve on their gameplay. I completely think that, you know, 343 has, they understand what they did wrong with Halo 4 in terms of, you know, the gameplay and multiplayer. And they will resolve to fix that. Like, there's no reason for them not to. They have all of the data. I mean, they have all of this stuff that they gathered from, you know, after they made Halo 4 that they can use to improve Halo 5. But storytelling's different because storytelling, you don't get the same kind of data that you do with, you know, matchmaking, you know, post-game reports and stuff. They need to work on making sure that Halo 5 has an amazing storyline that will capture the imagination of the people who enjoyed Halo 1, Halo 2, and Halo 3 storyline.
Right. And not, I would say not rely as heavily on the books as they did with Halo 4. Because we had people on, we had the podcast shortly after Halo 4 came out when we had Brian Goose and a couple, and Green, and I think someone else on, and we went into the whole thing of how even though they read the books, there are still some parts where they were confused in. So that whole story needs to be mostly self-contained and then have the books supplement certain aspects of the game.
Yeah. In fact, you don't even have to work on a dating sim for Halo. You could just put out a romantic novel in the Halo universe and I would be happy. Just put out like a Halo romance novel? Yeah, that'd be great. That would be fantastic. I don't know who I'd want to... probably Lasky and Palmer. I want a Lasky and Palmer love story. Like, terribly. Because think about it. Lasky lost his original love interest in his first contact with the Covenant. So, I mean, he's kind of out on love, you know. They took his love away from him with combat. But now there's this new love interest that doesn't have to worry about that because she can just kick everybody's ass. Like, nobody can, like, she doesn't have, yeah, like, that's amazing. It's great. If anything, Palmer would be the one to protect Lasky.
Yeah.
Really?
True. You make good points.
I'm not trying to make sense. I'm just saying, like, Lasky is less powerful than, you know, Spartan Palmer. She's a Spartan for a reason. I don't think Lasky has any special augmentations, other than his. I think Lasky could end up being a Spartan, maybe, if he didn't have that weird cryo disease.
Yeah.
But, I mean, whatever it is. But, I mean, now he's got that fixed with that weird spinal thing. You know, that thing on his back. Like, I always assumed that was what allowed him to go into cryo.
Oh, I don't know what that is, like, actually.
No other captains had it that I know of.
Hmm.
And he didn't have it in Forward Unto Dawn.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it must have been, you know, post-officer rank. So he went into the UNSC, became an officer, and got his spinal augmentation. I don't know what it does, but I just always assumed it was for the cryo thing.
Have to read into that.
Yeah.
All right. You want to read the last one, Brent?
Yes, I'll read the last one. Yes, from Spartan LZ. Hey, guys, I noticed you needed to have some people talk about the Spartan Assault from your Twitter feed. I played the game. I actually purchased a new laptop for my wife. She's been wanting to play on a new laptop for a while. Or she's been wanting a new laptop for a while.
I'm about to say.
Anyway, yeah. Well, I mean, I consider using anything like playing on it, you know, playing on a computer, using a computer, whatever. Anyways, I love the game, especially the vehicle combat and racking up multi-kills, however it was. In the beginning, the game was more work than fun to play the game due to the way the controls are set up on the game. I believe you use ESDX for the movement, and I tried using the trackpad to shoot. I had to finally dig out of the box my old mouse to have a better gaming experience. I'm not much of a PC gamer. Besides all that, the game is pretty short but super enjoyable. Although I've had numerous crashing issues with the game. The crashing could be because I bought a pretty low-end laptop, 15-inch on sale, with 4 gigs of RAM and an onboard integrated... Well, yeah, that's the point.
It's your problem.
Yeah, the onboard integrated graphics card. The graphics chip on your laptop, probably not fantastic for Sparks.
Nah.
I'm excited to finally pick up a new RT Surface since they are $349, so I can play it all over again with the touch controls. Hope you find this interesting and informative, Spartan LZ.
So the movement is actually... Everyone who's played first-person shooters knows what the movements are, so it's WSAD. So that might be your problem to start off with. You don't know what the movements are, and if you actually go into the menu, it does show you what the controls are, so you might want to look that up first next time. You definitely cannot play computer games with a trackpad. I don't know. I guess there are some people that just have never played computer games before, and they just have no idea what kind of hardware is the best to play on when you're playing a PC game. But yeah, you definitely want a mouse for
this. I like to play on my netbook.
I could probably play it on my netbook if I install Windows 8 on it.
Maybe.
It would run like crap because it's integrated graphics as well, but...
Well, I mean, yeah, it'd be like Slideshow, Spartan Assault, but...
Yeah. As far as actually the gameplay, though, he said that it took him a little while. It was more of a work to go through the first few levels, and then it got fun the more and more he played it. It kind of felt similar for me, too. It took me about two or three levels to get used to the controls, and then once I got it down, it's like, oh, well, this is cool. So it's really not that hard to pick it up. But I actually really enjoy the experience of having the keyboard and mouse, and I think I would actually prefer it over the touch controls. Because with a mouse, for any computer game, you have precision with the mouse.
Yeah.
It's so much better for me, I think.
I think...
Now, I'm waiting for the control support to come out this month to try it with the controls and get a comparison.
That's probably how I would play it. If I got it, I'd probably try to do it with an Xbox 360 controller when that becomes available. But I mean, definitely the mouse and keyboard are the way to go in terms of, I mean, anytime you can choose mouse and keyboard over a touch-based interface, assuming that, you know, it wasn't, there's some things that touch is better for, but it's not many things, and it's definitely generally not gaming. And the mouse and keyboard just seems like a much better way of controlling that game than a touchpad. And I've never even played it before. I've just seen it be played. So,
yeah.
You'll definitely want to... ESDX is not general. I mean, I've never seen that used in a computer. And I'm not
like,
making fun
of
you. I'm pretty new to computer gaming, too, but it's generally WASD, with W being top, A being right, S being bottom, and D being... Right, or A is left, D is right, and S is bottom.
Right.
So that's just default, generally. It can also change. You can put it on your arrow key. You can put it on any keys.
Not for Spartan Assault. You cannot change the controllers.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fun facts. You can't do that, so.
But the control scheme, once you get used to it, it's very simplistic.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to grasp, really. So. All right, well, that pretty much wraps up the show for tonight. So hopefully we didn't bore you guys too much. I think we did a pretty good job. And we actually filled up a good time slot, so maybe it was a good idea that we didn't have the Destiny guys on. But no, not to worry. We will have them on after PAX, so don't worry about that at all. Next week we will have Molten Sloa on, who actually did a survey regarding Spartan Ops. So back in, I want to say, maybe April or so, he wrapped up his Spartan Opscast podcast, where they actually went through and talked about every episode that came out for Spartan Ops, and then they did a community survey over on HBO. So he has the results of that, and he's going to come on our show and talk about it next week. So that's going to be exciting. That one will be pre-recorded, as I will be flying home to see my folks on Thursday. So, still debating whether or not to just do it live on Wednesday, but it's going to be very, very late. We'll be doing the recording like at 10:30, 11 o'clock on Wednesday night. So, we may just do a delayed broadcast of the podcast on the stream. So, You have that to look forward to on next week. And then the week after that, we will have Certain Affinity on to talk about the championship bundle. That week, August 20th is when the bundle will be coming out. So that means on the 23rd, we will have Certain Affinity on to talk about the map pack and the bundle as a whole. So hopefully, if by Justice Wishes, we may have some codes to give away during that podcast as well. So hopefully they will be generous enough to give us some of those. So stay tuned, and we might have some codes to give away to grab the championship bundle. So stay tuned for that. After that week, we're in PAX, or I'm in Seattle for PAX. So we will likely be doing a live stream there on Thursday. Probably have a couple other recording sessions throughout the weekend as well. So we will have lots of content coming out of Seattle. We'll be covering the Halo 4 Global Championship. We'll be covering some of the other stuff that's going to be there as well. And just lots of Halo stuff, I think, going down at PAX this year. So definitely keep an eye on our site. Hopefully we'll get some videos done for you guys as well. Taking lots of pictures, of course. So definitely stay tuned to us during the weekend of PAX. The weekend following, not sure what we're doing yet, but then the weekend after that, of course, is the Destiny folks. So that is our schedule for about the next month or so. Hopefully that's a entertaining list for you guys. I think that weekend between PAX and the Destiny one, we're going to do our next book podcast. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yes.
All right, that wraps up the show for tonight. Thank you for the live stream viewers who came and listened to us. I think we had about 8 or 9 or so unique viewers. So numbers are slowly growing, but they are growing steadily. So everyone who listens to us, we do broadcast our podcast live starting at 8 o'clock on Thursdays Eastern Time. And we don't start right at 8 o'clock. We usually start between 8:15 and 8:30 because we like to finish setting up a little bit, talk a little bit with the crowd, and then we dive into the show a little bit afterwards. So come join us for the pre-show. If not, come join us around 8:30, and we'll definitely be making headway into our podcast discussion. So come join the live stream. Have some pretty good conversation there. Sometimes they get crazy, so maybe if you just want to come have some fun, just hop in the live stream. Again, that's Thursdays at 8 o'clock on Twitch. We also have our Wacky Wednesdays that we've been doing every week, and that is our Customs Night. You can come watch us on Twitch at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or you can come join us. So whichever one you want, feel free. Come play some fun customs. We are slowly working in new customs into the rotation list as well, but we do have our favorites that we do play just about every single time. So everyone that has come has really enjoyed it. So if you are looking for a customs group to hang out with and you have a Wednesday night that's open, feel free to come on by. Remember, you can send us a submission to submissions@podtacular.com. You can do that by either sending it directly to us via email. You can do it by sending it to us with the big green button on our homepage at podtacular.com. Or, of course, you can send us a voicemail, like I said before, at 240-200-HALO. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and of course, like I said before, Twitch, where we do our live stream broadcasts. And we are wrapping up just kind of an update for those who follow The Mole. We are starting production this weekend, and it's been delayed somewhat, but we will have a trailer out probably within the next week or so. Be excited for that. It's very good stuff coming out of that. And hopefully, I'm still waiting for Rooster Teeth to post their view of our podcast panel. So hopefully once that's up, I can pull it together pretty quickly and throw that out on the YouTube for you guys to watch. With that said, thank you everyone again for tuning in. This has been episode 386 of Podtacular. We are almost at 400 brains. How about that?
Woo! That 400 is episodes. Yay!
Dang. That's a lot of episodes. So until next time, guys, keep on fragging those multiple account holders.
Yes, keep on fragging Xbox One headsets.